Women own more than half the land in Iowa, and more women are now farming that land. The new book, Women and the Land, profiles Iowa women farmers and landowners. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll explore Iowa women's relationships with the land with Barbara Hall and Catherine Gamble, the writer and photographer behind Women and the Land. I'll also talk with some of the women profiled in the book. Susan Arum, president and co-founder of Sustainable Iowa Land Trust, Denise O'Brien of Rolling Acres Farm near Atlantic, and Ellen Walsh Rossman of Rossman Farm near Harlan. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The new book, Women and the Land, profiles 25 Iowa women farmers and landowners, sharing their stories through words and stunning photography. This hour, I'll talk with some of the women profiled in the book. But first, Barbara Hall is the writer and Catherine Gamble is the photographer behind this work. Barbara is with me on the line right now. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
And Catherine is also here today. Hello, Catherine.
Hello.
And I understand that this project actually began with a story you heard on public radio. So
yes.
Tell me what happened.
I remember being in my car. I remember exactly where I was, and I heard this story that close to 50%, and maybe it is 50% now, of Iowa farms were owned by women. And that just struck me because I'm not a native Iowan, and I thought, and I had been living in Iowa for a little while, and I thought, what? I picture an old guy in overalls when I picture Iowa farmer, and I just had this spark of I want to see them. I want to see these women. I want to meet them, and I think other people need to see them as well. And so from there, I talked to Barb, a very good friend who knows how to get things done and knows how to make me show up. And she immediately went into action and just started finding women. And that was it. And there was no end result other than just a pure visual curiosity for me and wanting to tell a story. And so off we went.
So, Barb, when Catherine called you and said, hey, I heard this story, I'm curious about it, what was your response?
Immediately, yes, that is a story. And Catherine and I had collaborated for a long time in our professional lives and hadn't gotten to work together for quite some time, and I was anxious to work with her again, so I would have done anything she asked me to do, really. But I, right after she asked me if I would be interested, I said, of course, sure. And then I ran into a woman in my neighborhood named Lynn Hughes, who she handed me her card, and it said she worked for Women Food and Agriculture Network, and the bells just went off. I said, oh, my gosh, I need to talk to you because I want to start this project. And Lynn really got us set off in the right direction. And we talked to a few women to start with, and I happened to know the editor of the Iowan magazine, and I pitched the story to him, and he said yes, yes, yes. So we interviewed five women, I believe, for an article that appeared in the Iowan magazine in 2015, and we didn't want to stop. Once we got going, we knew it was bigger than that, and there was more than that. And every woman we talked to gave us the names of three or four more, and got to the point where we didn't have to look very hard anymore. It wasn't how are we going to get more women, but where are we going to stop with this, and what is it going to be? And it was probably about 2 years ago that we knew we had a book. But it got, by that time we had maybe a dozen, and we thought we wanted to get maybe a few more. And then I kept hearing about, oh, there's this lavender farmer. You want to do lavender? Yes, yes, yes. Oh, there's crickets. Do you want to do crickets? Yes, yes, yes. And then we added wind and just a couple of others to kind of round it out geographically across the state and also to make sure we had all the farming genres covered as much as possible, corn, soybeans, cows, pigs, you know, the things you think about.
Right. Now, tell me a little bit about your background, Barb. I'll ask both of you, because you do both kind of seem like unlikely people to tackle a book project about farming in Iowa. So, Barb, tell me about your background.
Well, I grew up in a small town in Iowa, Tipton, and I lived in town, but had lots of friends who lived in farms on farms, and it was always a special thing when you're about third to fifth grade, when overnights start to get to be a big thing. When you ride the bus home with one of your farm friends, it's really a cool thing, and you stay overnight with the farm friend, and then you get to ride the bus back to school in the morning. And I remember from those days, oh, my gosh, they have to get up so early. I think we were getting up like at 4:30 in the morning so they could do their chores and have breakfast and get on the bus at 6:30. And, the town kids didn't even wake up till 7:30 probably. So that was my first exposure to farms, and went to Iowa State University but had nothing to do with, agriculture there. About fifth grade, my teachers started telling me, you are a writer. Not you should be a writer, but you are a writer. And so I said, okay, cool. Well, I don't have to make any decisions about that. So I ended up going to Iowa State for journalism and worked in newspaper for a while. And then I was at Meredith Corporation as an editor for a number of years. And that's where I met Catherine and worked with her on a lot of things. And we had a lot of fun and became very good friends. And now I'm at a very cool creative services agency in Des Moines, where I'm a project manager and I'm not involved directly with the creative, but I touch creative every day, and it's really still an exciting part of my life.
Well, and Catherine, you mentioned being relatively new to Iowa, not having a farming background either. So tell me a little bit about you.
Well, I was actually born south side of Chicago, lived there till I was 10, then moved to Atlanta. My mom and I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, went to University of Georgia, where I studied journalism. But photography was the only thing that I actually got good grades in. So I thought, okay, photography, that's what I should do. And then moved to DC, where I assisted a commercial photographer. And about that time met my husband, who is from Des Moines. So I ended up moving to Des Moines 25 years ago for a couple of years and assisted a lot of the local commercial photographers in town who work for Meredith Corporation, and was here for 2 years and made a lot of contacts, and then ended up moving to New York City and working there for 8 or 9 years. And my husband moved there with me, and we had our first child there. And then when we got pregnant with our second, it was like, okay, what are we gonna do? I loved living and working in New York, but 90% of the jobs that I were doing was getting on a plane and going somewhere, and that just wasn't really going to work with kids for me. So I had a lot of clients at Meredith, and we had family, so Iowa was just a great place to come back to.
With this project, obviously, Catherine, you were taking the pictures, and we'll talk more about some of the really striking images that you collected for this book. But do you feel like a lack of agricultural background? Do you think that that was an asset in any way for you in bringing fresh eyes?
Maybe. I think the women probably take for granted how beautiful. Maybe not. I don't know how they could, but I never knew what we were going to get when we got in the car to go to the farm, but no one disappointed. Every place had something really cool and beautiful and interesting to capture. So I imagine that I know a lot of them, as soon as they saw me, thought, oh, yeah, this is happening today. And they'd look down at what they were wearing, and they would think, oh, I look a mess. And I'm like, no, you're perfect. This is so great. So, yeah.
How about you, Barb? Do you think that although you grew up in Iowa not having an intimate knowledge of farming, do you think that that was an asset for you in any way on this project?
I do think maybe it was, because I think I asked questions that might have seemed dumb to the farmers, but because I would guess most of the readers, or many of the readers, don't have a farm background either, I was asking the questions that would be understandable to the audience. And then we had a really great, I do have to give credit to our copy editor, Colleen Bradford Krantz, who did grow up on a farm. And she helped me a little bit in you know, just making sure I had some of the terminology right in describing what a tiling system is and things like that.
A lot of the farmers that you profile are focused on organic or focused on horticultural crops. This resurgence or this growing movement of local foods. Was that an effort on your part to look for farmers who were engaged in that kind of agriculture?
It really wasn't. It just kind of emerged, and we didn't have any sort of editorial slant at the beginning. We were just, wanting to tell these stories of these women. In general, mostly my question was, why are you doing this and how did you get here? But that angle did come out. It wasn't good journalism or scientific research, but the message has kind of come out from each of these stories that women are very concerned about the quality of the product that's grown on the land, whether it's food or whether it's going into gasoline or whatever, and also about taking care of the land. I hesitate to say that women are taking better care of the land than those that went before, but it kind of seems like that. And we, in fact, at least one farmer turned us down to be interviewed for the story because she detected a tone. When I was trying to recruit other farmers to be involved in the project, I sent out the Iowan article just to show that we had some credibility. And one woman said, you're bashing conventional farmers, and I don't want to be a part of this. And I tried to convince her that, no, we want conventional farmers. We want to tell your story too. But she didn't want any part of it.
I noticed that when I look at the map, you have a very cute illustrated map that shows sort of the location of the farms all around the state. And they're pretty well distributed all around the state with kind of a big hole up in northwestern Iowa. Was there an effort to work at geographic diversity and trying to represent the entire state of Iowa?
There was, and we just couldn't find anything up there. It seems like I don't have a sharp memory of that. We might have found a couple up there that were sort of similar to some of the other stories that we already had, so we didn't want to be repetitious.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break right now. We're talking about the new book, Women and the Land. Barbara Hall is the writer, Catherine Gamble, the photographer behind this book. The book profiles 25 Iowa women farmers and landowners, and we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking to some of the women profiled in the book. Also, Barbara Hall will be at the Iowa City Public Library on Saturday, October 14th, part of the Iowa City Book Festival. She'll be reading at 10 o'clock in the morning. Welcome to join our conversation this hour as well. If you have some experience as a woman farmer or landowner, or want to talk about a woman in your life, you can give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the new book, Women and the Land. It profiles 25 Iowa women farmers and landowners. And I'm going to be talking to some of the women profiled in the book. With me still is Barbara Hall, the writer behind this book, and Catherine Gamble, the photographer. And before I introduce one of the farmers that you profile, Catherine, that factoid that you heard on the radio, mm-hmm. that more than 50% of land in Iowa is owned by women. I mean, a lot of the information behind that is that women often live longer than their husbands. They inherit this land.
Right.
A lot of the women who own farmland are renting it out. Farming is still a male-dominated profession, although, of course, anybody who has ever spent any time on a family farm knows that women have always been an essential part of those operations. But as you guys started to explore that statistic, I know you found a lot of women farmers, but were you, as you learned more about the nuances of that statistic, were you kind of surprised that, so many of the women owners of the land didn't necessarily have much to do with the management of the land?
Well, I was surprised by that, but I also I think that that's changing, and I think that they maybe traditionally weren't, but that's not the case anymore. And you know, they seem to be very, you know, getting to be very involved.
Right, you found a lot of women who were very engaged,
yeah,
and very,
yes,
involved.
Yeah, I did.
All right. Well, I want to bring one of the farmers into the conversation now. Ellen Walsh Roseman is an organic farmer near Harlan. She's also the owner of a farm-to-table business, farm-to-table procurement and delivery, and Milk and Honey, a farm-to-table restaurant in Harlan, along with her husband. Hello, Ellen.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And clearly already we can hear that you're involved in a lot of different businesses, different ventures. But tell me a little bit about your background in becoming a farmer.
Sure. So at a very young age, I had been exposed to agriculture. I lived right next door to my uncle, who was a dairy farmer, and spent a lot of time on his farm, and worked on dairy farms, was very active in FFA and in high school. And I knew that I would always want to do something that involved agriculture. When I was in third grade, I said I wanted to be a farmer.
And when you were in third grade and said you wanted to be, yeah, a farmer, were people encouraging of that? Because when you were in third grade, there weren't that many women farmers.
Yeah, I can't really recall the encouragement, but I think, you know, I kind of got away from that, and then it kind of re-sparked again when I was in high school and was really involved in agriculture, or in FFA, and I knew that I had to have agriculture be a part of my life. I didn't really know what aspect at that point, so went to Iowa State to try to figure out what direction I wanted to be going into. I've always envisioned myself doing something with agriculture, and I'm actually back doing what I had said I was wanted to do when I was in third grade.
And you're in Western Iowa near Harlan, and you were fortunate enough to also fall in love with someone who wanted to farm as well, which is nice to have a future like that. Tell me a little bit about your farm.
So, yes, I married into a farming family, which is very fortunate because it's really hard to enter into farming and at a mid-scale level like we are. Most beginning farmers are doing something small like vegetables or, you know, pastured livestock or whatnot. But I married into the Roseman family 7 years ago, and the Roseman family has been farming organically for over 30 years. And we're mid-sized diversified farm. We support 2.5 families off of 700 acres of certified ground, and we raise corn and beans and some popcorn. We have cattle and hogs. When I moved to the farm, I decided to start a vegetable operation just because there was none of that really happening in my county, and I really wanted to use food as an educational tool to educate people about food and really try to draw connectness to food. We live in a very rural farm-based community, and nobody really actually grew their own food.
And you started that as a CSA, a community-supported agriculture project, so people were buying shares. But you have moved into operating a food hub. You started out making connections with local restaurants, selling to restaurants, but now you and your husband have a food hub to distribute local food.
Yeah, that's correct. Today our truck is in Des Moines. We work with 40 different producers across the state of Iowa. And I quickly realized after I had my son, like when he was 8 months old, and I was also trying to grow vegetables, that this is really hard to scale my operation without marketing infrastructure. And I visited with my other farmer friends about that and said, you know, if a truck just showed up at your farm and took the food where you needed to go, because if you want to really make your business profitable, you need to be close to a metro area, and a lot of farmers aren't. We're an hour and a half from Des Moines and an hour from Omaha, and that's where a lot of our market is.
Well, and then just the investment of selling at a farmer's market, that's an incredible amount of time investment.
It takes so much time, and I would bring my baby with me, and it was just me and my son to the farmer's market, and it just found that, you know, standing there for 3 hours selling 1 pound of potatoes at a time was really exhausting versus selling 30 pounds of potatoes at once to one customer.
Well, and so in talking about the future of local food in Iowa and your hope that in Iowa we can grow and eat more of our own food as opposed to exporting what we grow and importing what we eat. I mean, creating that infrastructure to distribute the food, that's a really important part of that puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. There was really no other infrastructure support, because right now we're already seeing in Iowa that farmers markets are kind of stagnant, and it's exhausting for a farmer. You know, they got to go to like 5 farmers markets a week. CSAs are, the signups are down for that. And the only really way for like small scale operators is to scale up their operation is to focus heavily on wholesale. And in Iowa, there was no infrastructure support to help make that happen. Other parts of the country, there is that. So my farm kind of shifted from actually growing food to helping other farmers grow food. And then that also evolved into opening a farm to table restaurant, which we serve our meat and our eggs from our farm, as well as all the other food that we're sourcing through farm table. So kind of have our hand in all parts of the food system.
Well, and it's kind of a leap to go from saying, hey, I want to be a farmer, I want to grow food, to I'm going to help redesign the food system in the state that I live in. That
right.
seems like a pretty big plan.
I feel so passionate about it. And I talk about this in the book. You know, I thought I was going to move away and make policy change from afar. And I realized that I actually needed to stay in Iowa to make positive change and help revitalize the rural communities. And I didn't know what I was going to do when I moved to the farm and got married. I just kind of, you know, dabbled and kind of had an enlightening of like, this is what's missing. And hopefully we're making positive change. But Denise, who you'll be talking to later, she's mm-hmm. one of the farmers that we work with. We work with other women farmers. You know, we've had a couple of women farmers who've said to us that they've quit their off-farm job because of the income that they know that they're going to get through farm table. And I think, you know, we all eat and food connects everybody. So it's really, you know, at the beginning when I said when I started my farm, I wanted to use food as an educational tool. And I mean, that's still the main objective. We have the restaurant now too, and people are getting exposed to all sorts of wonderful, delicious local heirloom vegetables and organic hamburger. And so we're still, that's still my goal, is connecting people with food and using that as our objective.
Now, obviously, your husband is a partner. You, the two of you are partners in this. His family was doing organic food before organic food was really a thing, or organic yeah. growing was really a thing. But being included in this collection with 24 other women who are involved in farming and land use, how does that change how you think about yourself as a woman farmer?
Sure. I mean, it was quite an honor. And I think when Barb and Catherine came to interview me, I was still actually farming. And then we had to do some revisions about where I'm at now. So I still feel like, I mean, I don't really know if I still am technically a farmer, but because a lot of my energy now is spent into helping other farmers and such. But it's pretty great collection, especially because I also connected to a lot of the women from my past life or current life or people that I work with. So it's a pretty great story to learn how we all are connected, and you know, women, we have a safe space. We know that we can, even if we don't grow different things and have different viewpoints on how to grow things, we all have a safe space and can have that solidarity and connectedness that way through the book.
Well, and Catherine took a beautiful, beautiful picture of you, although your son kind of steals the show in it a little bit.
Yeah, he's now 4.5, so, and I've got another little kiddo, so he was a little stinker when we did that photo shoot.
No, he was perfect.
Yeah, he looks pretty perfect from here. But Ellen, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Ellen Walsh Roseman, she's an organic farmer near Harlan. She's the owner of Farm to Table business, Farm Table Procurement and Delivery. It's a food hub to help local farmers get their food into local markets. She also, along with her husband, owns the restaurant Milk and Honey, a farm to table restaurant in Harlan. She's part of this collection, 25 Iowa women farmers and landowners profiled in the book Women and the Land, written by Barbara Hall, photographer Catherine Gamble. And Catherine, when you took pictures of the women in the book, what were you hoping to capture?
I honestly didn't have, I tried not to make a plan, just respond to what was there. Because I'm a working commercial photographer, I wasn't able to go there and spend all day. So a lot of times it was literally driving 2.5 hours, getting out of the car, and within 10 minutes making a decision, this is the one heroic shot that I'm going to take of this woman. And then we would be back in the car in less than an hour and then drive home so that I could then go to work or the next day or fly out or whatever. So
you say heroic. Was that your goal, to see them standing tall on their land?
Yeah. By the third one, I felt like, yes, heroic, because I think I work hard, but then I quickly realized, no, this is working hard. And so, yes, I felt heroic was the perfect phrase for that.
And Barbara, in writing these profiles, how much time did you get to spend with these women?
About that same amount. We would generally we went together, and while Catherine was scouting, and she maybe spent more than 10 minutes, but I would be, you know, doing the interview part and taking notes. And as you know, Charity, the best quotes come when the notebook is put down. So I tried not to put the notebook down, but I would do the interview part, and then we'd go take pictures, and I would be helping with that process too. And still, that all that time talking and asking questions and sneaking out the notebook again when something wonderful was said. And then a lot of times I did follow up phone calls as well, if I needed to clarify something, or like, you know, Ellen said, we were there 4 years ago, and things have changed in her life. So updating some of the information also.
I want to bring Susan Arum into the conversation now, another one of the women profiled in the book. She is the president and co-founder of the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust, which is something we'll talk a lot more about in a few minutes. She also has a farm in Cedar County near Tipton. Susan, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And you have a really unusual backstory as far as buying land and farming land in Iowa. You grew up on the East Coast, and you came here for school. What made you want to buy land in Iowa?
Well, coming to school at the University of Iowa and really becoming immersed in Iowa City and spending my summers and holidays here, because my home was too far away a lot of times, really got me to see more of the off-campus life, and I just fell in love with Iowa. And I was here in the 80s, and when I graduated, I stayed. And I watched the devastation of the family farm through the whole 80s. It really was my first foot into political action of any type. And I never forgot those stories of the people being spooked and scared off their property. And I ended up leaving Iowa in late 80s due to jobs and a husband. But I always wanted to come back. And in the late 90s, I was able to put together the money to buy some land. And then that was my touchstone, you know, if I could just get back. And
so finally, you bought this land, but you weren't living in Iowa.
No, 1997, I bought the land. I had a realtor looking, and my dad had passed, and so I had a little chunk of change. And I said, this is my chance. If I could just put some roots down in Iowa, I could get back. And so I did, and didn't get back really full-time until 2010. But then I came back I felt like I was coming home. I am a transplant, but Iowa's always been in my heart.
University of Iowa doesn't turn out a whole lot of farmers. What was your career?
I was actually a journalist with also an English major, but I always said one taught me how to write and one didn't. But and I can't call myself a farmer yet, but I'm learning fast. And it started by taking our 80 acres out of corn and bean and putting it into prairie and trees.
Well, and that 80 acres, when you bought it, you were renting out the land and as a farming operation. What made you think, I mean, corn and soybeans, conventional farming operation, what made you think you wanted to make a change?
Yeah, I was the classic absentee landowner there for about 13 years. First, we rented it to the farmer I bought it from, and then a couple years later, we rented it to the FFA, local FFA, which was great. But my little daughter and I were camping one day in the summer, and all this white powder was puffing up around us in our sleeping bags. So I asked the FFA teacher if they could remove the chemicals from their production, not understanding what a huge ask that was. And they canceled the contract. And then my neighbor farmed it for the next few years, so it was all okay.
All right. So we will talk more about that in just a moment. I'm talking to Susan Arum. She's president and co-founder of the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust and owns 80 acres in Cedar County near Tipton. Also with me, Barbara Hall and Catherine Gamble, the women behind the book, Women and the Land. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about some of the women profiled in the new book, Women and the Land. It profiles 25 Iowa women farmers and landowners. With me, Barbara Hall, the writer behind the book, Catherine Gamble, the photographer behind the book. By the way, Barbara Hall will be at the Iowa City Public Library on Saturday, October 14th at 10 a.m. as part of the Iowa City Book Festival. And right now, also, I'm talking with Susan Arum. She is president and co-founder of the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust, and she has a farm in Cedar County near Tipton. And before we get into talking about the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust, because I want to bring another farmer into the conversation who was also one of your co-founders at Silt. With the farm, you decided to take it out of production, to put it into prairie and try to reclaim some of the soil, because you did have a lot of soil loss on that farm. What is your plan with this land long term?
Well, I've learned that people like me who take land out of production end up raising the price of land surrounding us. So we've learned that we could create an environment of nature-friendly farming to combine those two things. So we can produce food. We've placed an orchard. We've planted an orchard in the place. And once the prairie is out of government program, we plan to let someone graze it with a number of different species and then start a vegetable operation. I mean, it's 80 acres. It's plenty of land to grow food on in a nature-friendly way. So we hope to combine both of those things.
Well, and so many young farmers, and we'll talk more about this in just a moment as well, but young farmers or people, they don't have to be young, who want to start a horticultural crop farming operation have a really hard time getting their hands on land. So is that part of your hope to be part of that solution as well?
Exactly. We plan to put an easement, a conservation easement from Silt on our property so that when we're long gone and our daughter decides she wants to sell, it'll be much cheaper for a young farmer to come on and be able to get access to land.
I want to bring Denise O'Brien into the conversation. She's the owner and operator of Rolling Acres Farm near Atlantic, one of the co-founders of Silt, the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust as well, and a long history in farming, in mentoring, and advocating for sustainable agriculture. Hello, Denise.
Good morning, Charity and all.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And tell me a little bit about Rolling Acres Farm, the land that you farm.
Well, I was one of those people that married a farmer. I had met him in 42 years ago now, and ended up being a farmer. And we farm on the land that my husband, Larry Harris, was raised on. So we Rolling Acres is now has gone through a number of iterations, and this current one is community-supported agriculture, and then also selling wholesale and to restaurants through farm table delivery. In fact, farm table delivery picked up raspberries, broccoli, and hot peppers at my farm this morning. So we've gone through everything from beef and cattle operation in the very beginning in the late 70s through milking cows for 20 years. And in 1995, my husband took a job off the farm, and we continued to farm and finally landed on doing a CSA, among other things that we do.
And you've been farming organically for 20 years now. What was it that made you make that shift?
Well, actually, it's been 40 years
oh,
that
40,
we've been organic.
Okay.
Yeah, 42. Well, you know what? I met Larry, and when I returned to Iowa, I was living in northern Vermont. I came back to Iowa for a couple weddings in the family, and I met Larry. And Larry said he wanted to be an organic farmer. And the fact that he was handsome and laughable, you know, that he had a wonderful personality and that I fell in love just happened to make that an easy situation.
You have been an advocate for organic farming for a long time and also a teacher, a mentor since the very start. Tell me about why that's important to you, to help others learn about farming in this way.
Oh, yes. Well, yes. You could consider me a grandmother of some of the issues, actually. But and we have currently, we have a young woman on the farm who's from an urban area in Chicago, and Ari is helping me so I can make this phone call this morning. She and Amber, who I've been a member or who I've been a mentor to from Avoca, Iowa, for Forktail Farm, helped me put the CSA together today so I can take this time out. But what's important to me is it's a two-way street. I learn so much from the people who are on the farm and who come to the farm. And we are fortunate that we have a house big enough that we can offer a room or sometimes two rooms to people living with us. Our benefit is, Larry and I figure, that is because many of our mentees cook, and we don't take time to eat. So they do a lot, and we learn a lot of good recipes. We learn new technology and things. While we're doing, Ari and I were talking about this yesterday, is that she's got a one-on-one learning experience with me, and hopefully over the years I've acquired enough experience that I'm able to, you know, help her make some decisions in her life. And those decisions aren't always about farming. Sometimes the decision is made like, there's no way I can do this, but I want to keep involved in food issues.
You know, a lot of people get very excited about the idea of organic farming or horticultural farming or running a CSA. It's such extraordinary hard work, and the margins are so slim. Mm-hmm. Do you find that sometimes you do end up discouraging people?
That could be the case, because I don't think people realize the hard work that's involved. And in my case, and personally, I love the physical work of it, and I love the mental work of it. And I'm also privileged to have a partner who works off the farm that can smooth out that roller coaster of farm prices and things and give us a more stable income. There's things like health care that people have to pay for and college debt that people have to put into their budget. And at the margins of farming, there's hardly a possibility unless we would get universal health care, those sort of things. I once said to Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack several years ago when he was having hearings at the Iowa State Fair, I told him that my husband and I were looking forward to the time we could be on Social Security so we could afford to farm and we'd have a stipend to afford that privilege.
You have been very outspoken over the years, as you're indicating a little bit to us here in advocating for sustainable farming. You've actually even spoken at the United Nations, right?
Oh, gosh, that was years ago, Charity. And yes, I did. I that was an incredible experience for me. And I have had such a privileged life of being a woman farmer. And I wanted to say, too, that Women, Food, and Agriculture Network began this whole, when Catherine said she heard this about women own 50% of the land, we found a study from 1993 that indicated that. It was a USDA study. And we started asking questions around in our churches and in our families about, so how do you make decisions and what do you want with your land? And we've covered a lot of ground, and Women, Food, and Agriculture Network is going to be 20 years old, is 20 years old this year, and we're celebrating the what we've done to bring visibility to women farmers.
Now, I want to talk to you and Susan about founding SILT, the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust, because as you were saying, with bringing young farmers into the fold, one of the biggest hurdles, of course, is access to land. And that's one of the things that SILT is working on. But I don't know which one of you wants to tell me about the kernel of this idea. Where did this come from? Susan, do you want to answer that?
I guess it came at my kitchen table with my husband and all the experiences we were having with young farmers traveling through our house, young farm volunteers and interns. And
this is a worldwide project to connect young farmers to organic farms all over the world where they can go and volunteer and gain skills.
Right. One of those great internet things like Airbnb, but it's worldwide opportunities on organic farms, which have been around a long time. And you trade half a day's work for room and board for the day. So we got to get all kinds of stories from these young people who are so hardworking and decent. We've had great luck with our woofers, as they're called. But I knew they'd never get access to land. And that just started to plant the seed that maybe this is something that Iowa needs. And it was a great excuse for me to call up a bunch of heroes from the 80s that I'd only read about in the newspaper, like Denise O'Brien and Jean Lloyd Jones and others, and say, what's been going on in Iowa? Is this something we need? And there were people like Ellen out there, young people who were trying to rebuild the food system, and other young people also like her and others who were trying to farm. And if they weren't lucky enough to marry into a farm family, they just didn't have the security of the land. They had year-to-year leases. Who would plant a fruit tree with a one-year lease, for example? And the more I asked, is this a problem and what needs to be done, the more answers I got. Thankfully for Women, Food, and Ag Network and a lot of other nonprofits, they'd already done a lot of the heavy lifting. They were generating those young farmers. We just needed to kind of make it permanent by protecting the land.
All right. And Denise, you got involved in this as one of 23 other co-founders of SILT. I mean, why did you think this was such an important idea?
Well, for the exact reasons that Susan said, and I have to also catch myself. Everybody says young farmers, but there's farmers of all ages, really. There's career-changing people in that. So then, and access to land is a major, everywhere you do surveys around the country, is that capitalization, if you can even find the land, and then the investment in the land is so huge that it really prevents people from going into farming, for sure.
With SILT so far, how much progress have you made? What have you been able to accomplish, Susan?
Oh, the response has been unbelievable. We already have $1.4 million in land assets in less than 3 years. We have, in the book it says one number, but now we're at over 70 landowners talking about more than 7,000 acres to protect between now and 10 years from now. And that's mostly from word of mouth and a few good, media exposure, and very little staff. So we call ourselves now land rich and cash poor, like every other farmer in Iowa.
And then, but, you know, people who want to take advantage of this, I mean, how do the people who are hoping to get access to land, how do they benefit from this trust?
Well, it does two things. Either we own the land, and we've gotten a lot of farms donated to us. We were surprised about that, actually.
So people actually outright donating farmland to
donating
SILT,
land to
which
us,
which is incredible, given the price of farmland right now. That's an incredible donation.
Exactly. And the interesting thing is our farms are much smaller farms, so we can accept something as small as 20 or 30 acres with timber on it, because we can grow food in the timber. We know how to do that. Our farmers know how to do that and make a living. So the one way is we provide these long-term leases on land that we own. but the farmer gets the chance to earn equity in the house, the barns, and the business. So that's where they gain their equity, or they can own it outright, but we never put the land back out on the market. That keeps it affordable for generations. And the other way is through agricultural conservation easements, which is an awful word, but there are land protection agreements that are attached to the deed. And when you restrict the use of the land into the future to just sustainable food production, it drops the price significantly. The landowner who does it usually has some huge tax incentives that are available, but the truth is it's a gift for generations to come.
Denise, you've been spending so many years spreading a message of sustainability, mentoring other farmers. Take a snapshot of this moment in time, because we know that the local food movement has grown. We know that there are more people who want to operate small farms and grow horticultural crops or farm in a sustainable way. And we know people with larger farms who want to farm in a sustainable way. But if you look at the statistics, it hasn't necessarily shifted the percentage of food that is grown and consumed in Iowa that much. What do you see at this moment in time that gives you hope for the future?
Well, it's the children that give me hope in the future, and that is yesterday at our farm, for instance, we had a group of preschoolers and some grade school kids, and they're doing schoolyard gardens, they're learning about food, and they will be our future farmers. The future farmers may not come from a rural area or from a farm. In fact, urban gardening is the fastest growing part of agriculture now, and so I really place my bet that those they're learning how, you know, to cook in school. In instances, I don't want to paint a rosy picture, because every day I'm discouraged about a lot of the things that go on. But if we keep working with children and young people, and that's where the shift, we may not see it. I may not see it in my lifetime, although I love it when my grandchildren come to the farm and they go, "Mima, where are the carrots? Mima, where's the radishes?" And, you know, and they run out and pick them themselves. That's a wonderful privilege for me. But I want all children to be able to have that ability to have access to land and those opportunities. And so I remain optimistic, you know, and it comes and goes with the day of the week sometimes, but today I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Denise, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome, Charity. It was my pleasure.
Denise O'Brien, the owner and operator of Rolling Acres Farm near Atlantic, one of the co-founders of SILT, the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust. I also want to say thank you to you, Susan.
Thank you very much.
Susan Ehrman is the president and co-founder of the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust and has a farm in Cedar County near Tipton. And we have just 1 minute left, Barbara and Catherine. Barbara, this collection, again, of 25 women farmers and women landowners that you profiled, when people spend time with this book, what do you want them to take away from it?
I think just the word heroism, like Catherine said, that these women are heroes. They're changing the state. They're changing the world. They're changing the way we think about food and the way we think about the land.
And Catherine, mm-hmm. Your images carry so many stories with them. What do you want people to take away from looking at those images and learning about the women in the book?
I guess as I'm sitting here and I'm listening to all this, I feel an excitement that I didn't even realize, because I knew that these women were special, and I'm just so excited that light is being shown on them and their stories and what they believe in, and I just encourage people to read the words and not just look at the pictures. And
thank you. Although it is a beautiful, beautiful book. Catherine Gamble, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Barbara Hall, thank you.
Thank you.
Barbara Hall is the writer. Catherine Gamble is the photographer. The book is Women and the Land. It profiles 25 Iowa women farmers and landowners. And Barb Hall will be at the Iowa City Public Library on Saturday, October 14th, as part of the Iowa City Book Festival. This is Talk of Iowa.